you, Gary. Good morning. Welcome to each of you. I am happy to be here today, and my family is all in Colorado for the reunion, so I got home from work yesterday and was trying to get stuff done for this morning's sermon and the lesson I'm going to teach tonight and get a couple things done around the house and all that. I was tired. I found myself drifting off to sleep several times. I didn't have anybody at my house to make a lot of noise and keep me awake. And I got here to church and actually sat down and realized, just among other things, why I'm grateful when my wife is here is I just pulled a pair of pants out of the closet. She hangs up all my stuff, and I think she's got a method to it, and I didn't realize that these are probably not church pants. I got in and looked, and there's a split in the seam right in the middle there. So I wasn't sure how long Gary was going to talk here, so I was standing for a little bit because I didn't want to sit down. And anyway, so I'll change these before tonight. But I guess I've had just about every holiday this year. I had Christmas. I guess that was last year. But and then I preached Easter and Mother's Day. So I suppose it makes sense that I would have a sermon for Father's Day. And I'm looking here, and I'm seeing that because of our travel time of year and all that, I don't have a ton of fathers in the midst here, nor a ton of young men, which is kind of really what this sermon is focused on, is men in general. But I do think that the things that I'm going to discuss today, and I don't have a whole lot here, but the things I'm going to discuss today are worthy of us to consider. And as I talk about some of these things, about God's desires for men and fathers and all that, well, it's something that's good for the ladies who are here to think about, for the mothers that are here to be talking about to their sons, and not just their sons, to be talking about to their daughters. This is what you ought to be looking for, and for you young ladies, these are characteristics of a godly man. And these are things that I think are very important. So hopefully my message today is applicable to everybody. I'm going to start in the book of 2 Corinthians in chapter 4. And I'm going to spend a couple minutes here beginning in the first verse. And here in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul's telling the church in Corinth. He says, "Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not." And so he makes this statement. He says, we have a ministry. You know, Paul's job, what you see here in the book of 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, is Paul, this is actually a pretty, I wouldn't say we spend a lot of time on, but this is one of these roles of the ministry, is we spend time addressing problems. Sometimes we address it over the pulpit. Sometimes we come to our members, those who are part of the flock, and we, you know, caution them on things or try to counsel with them or all that. But this is part of the job of the ministry. And in this these two letters to the church in Corinth, that's exactly what Paul was doing. It was a church with a lot of problems. There were issues there. And were there only just one, it probably wouldn't be so bad. But the book of 1 Corinthians, he lays out a handful of things. You guys are doing this, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you're doing this, and you've got to change. And then in 2 Corinthians, there were some changes that were made, and he's acknowledging it. And then he begins to talk about, okay, this is why it mattered to me. This is why I said this. And so here you see that Paul is talking about this as he begins writing to Corinthians, to the church in Corinth in the second book. And he begins talking about it. Well, this is why it matters. This is why it mattered to me. This is why, you know, I called you out. And this is why I'm trying to encourage you and all of that. And so he begins defending these things. And so he says, seeing that I have this ministry, as I've received mercy from God and I have this responsibility, I faint not. I'm not going to, just because things are difficult, because you may not like what I have to say or anything like that, I'm not going to give up. I have this responsibility. He says, but we've renounced the hidden things of dishonesty, not walking in craftiness, nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. And here he makes this kind of crazy statement, or kind of confusing statement. He says, myself and the other minister, he says, we, there was another man who was with him in writing. We have made changes in our life. We are not like we used to be. Because we've received the mercy of God, because we've made changes, this is why we are able to come to you. And why we are able to encourage you and to tell you there is a better way. And so, you know, we look at this word ministry, and this word ministry, you know, we in our church, we would oftentimes, the first thing you say is, well, you're talking about a minister, a teacher, a priest, an elder, an apostle, all that sort of stuff. But I want you to think about this, that a minister is an office or duty or a function that is subordinate to something else. Subordinate to something else. In the Greek, which this was translated from, that word that is ministry, it means an attendance as a servant. Figuratively, an aid or a service. So Paul says, seeing as how we have this responsibility, we have an attendance to you. We owe it to you. We work for you. We're not going to faint, but we're going to be working to encourage and lift up and strengthen. And so Paul introduces this, and I want us to think about this, that the role of a father is a minister. You're a subordinate, and you have responsibilities. And this is the responsibility of uncles. This is the responsibility of men. You know, I've been blessed in my life to have several people, several men who filled important roles that are father roles to me. And of course, I had a father and a father I love very much, and I had several other men who involved themselves with me and made themselves subordinate to God in looking to be a blessing to those who are around them. And so I want us to think about that first. I want you to think about that. And young men, and hopefully maybe some of you will listen to this later, you'll talk about it. You have been called to be a servant, subordinate to God. And a servant is looking to do things always for others. This is of great importance. I'm going to jump over to verse 8, and I'm going to read down a handful of verses. Paul makes this statement. He says, this is what it's like being responsible. He says, we're troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. And I think that probably, in terms of looking at this phrase, this verse, if you aren't actually a father, you can't really understand the depth of what Paul was saying here. I believe that we don't actually mature until we become responsible for something else other than us. I don't believe we fully mature. I don't believe until we can put away the childishness of us being the most important and put something, someone else in front of us, we never truly grow. And the trouble with it is, and the reason why throughout all of our nation and throughout the world you have men who give up the responsibility of fatherhood and of manhood and all this, because this is true almost daily. We are troubled on every side. I had an interview the other day. So I was testing for captain in my organization and sat down and had a 40-minute interview, and they're throwing questions at me. And one of the things that they asked was about, you know, well, what characteristics, what qualities do you have, what experience do you have that puts you in a position to be a good leader here? And as I was thinking and preparing and as I was talking, one of these things I made this statement was, you know, it's been a long time since I made a decision that had any weight that was about me. it was always, and it has always been, that decision that I've made was bearing in mind my responsibility to my wife and to my children as pastor, to my local. And we find these questions and these things coming all the time. Fathers ought to bear, if you stand in and uphold the responsibility that God desires to give you, it is full of trouble. You're challenged all the time. The fathers who are in here know that. You feel a burden for everyone who is around you, and you work yourself crazy to make sure that they have everything, and you're considering and you're thinking about the future. Troubled on every side. What do I do? How do I prepare my children? How do I prepare them for things? You know, I was reading an article the other day, and Congress just passed a bill, and they're reinstituting a mandatory draft. They're going to where it used to be, if you're 18, you just send something in. It was voluntary. I mean, you're supposed to, but now they're going to use databases and all that to figure out all of the men. Turn 18 and up for the draft. And I thought about that. I thought about my son, my oldest son. 16 years old, going to be 18 soon. The world is on fire, and have I prepared him to go and face great challenges? It's part of my responsibility as a father. Anyway, I've kind of gotten off course. Paul says, you know, having this responsibility for you, he says, I'm troubled. We're troubled on every side. But we're not distressed by it, and we're perplexed but not in despair. Persecuted but not forsaken, cast down but not destroyed, always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be manifest in our body, for which we live. For we which live are always delivered unto death for Jesus' sake, that the life also of Jesus might be manifest in our mortal flesh. And so Paul says, we've got all these things going on, and we bear these burdens, these frustrations, these troubles, this responsibility. We do it because we bear in our hearts that Jesus Christ also sacrificed. Jesus Christ also desired to be and took up the responsibility of a servant. That he didn't make decisions that had to do with himself. And Paul says if he did it and we're dedicated to him, then we also can bear these things. And jump to verse 13. And Paul says, we have the same spirit of faith. According as it is written, I believed and therefore have I spoken. That's from the book of Psalms. And then Paul goes on to say, we also believe and therefore we speak. And he says, so because we've experienced it and we've experienced the Lord, this is why we speak. This is why we encourage. This is why we chasten. This is why we bear these difficult troubles and all of these things. Because we've experienced God, and that's why we speak it. Down to verse 16, for which cause we faint not. But though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is for but a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding an eternal weight of glory. While we look not on the things which are seen, but on the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not are eternal. And I think this is one of these very important things that Paul finishes this particular chapter with. I mean, Paul didn't write it in chapters, but he kind of came to a conclusion of this particular statement, making this. He says, well, because we've experienced God, and because we've endured trouble, and we've been strengthened, and because all of these, we don't faint. We don't faint. Every time there's a new trouble, we pick it up. Because what's going on here, it's only for a moment. Only for a moment. The greatest lesson my father ever taught me. The greatest lesson. I've told this story before. I'll continue to tell it. I've told it to young guys that I work with. When I have this in my notes at the end, but I've got a young guy on my truck right now. He's training. Got out of the academy. He went to the academy with Logan. He's on my truck. And every shift we're together, I try to think of some other crazy, miserable, difficult workout for us to do. and to just make us want to quit. And when we finish this workout, all of these different ones that I do, I always win. I always get the first one. But you know, I have this conversation with them every time. It's not because I'm stronger, it's not because I'm faster, it's not because I'm better, but because I learned a lesson from my dad a long time ago. And we were out hunting, and it was cold. We were out, and it was cold, and I had not packed a jacket. Maybe it was back at camp, or maybe I hadn't brought one. You know, that came to a point where my dad is kind of like I am right now. When I tell my sons, hey, we're going somewhere, I'm not going to check what they pack. You choose not to pack something, you're going to be miserable. You'll learn a lesson. Anyway, for whatever reason, I didn't have a coat. And my dad saw me shivering, took his jacket off and gave it to me. And he had nothing else. And I said, Dad, if you give me that, aren't you going to be cold? And he says, well, sure I am, son. He says, but I'm just not going to think about it. Never had a better lesson in my life. And what we focus on, what we allow ourselves to think about, is where we're going to go. Tell this to this young guy that I'm working with. So, you know, the reason why I'm finishing all this over you is because I'm not focusing on the pain. I'm not focusing on feeling claustrophobic. I'm not focusing on the fact that I can't breathe, that my bottle of air is almost out. When I'm in a house that's on fire, I stop focusing on the fact that I can't see anything and it's blazing hot. I don't think about it. Instead, I think about what I need to do, where I need to go. And this is what Paul says. He says, we can endure all of these things because I'm not thinking about the struggle that is in front of me right now, but I'm looking beyond. That when I overcome, there is an eternal weight of glory that is ahead of me. This is what men and fathers should be talking about, should be encouraging those around them. That young men be thinking about this. You are capable of overcoming. You can do so many things, physically, spiritually, if we focus on those right things. Greatest lesson my dad ever taught me. I'm going to jump over and I'm just going to go to the very first verse, the very first chapter, the very first book in the Book of Mormon. And Nephi makes this statement and he says, I, Nephi, having been born of goodly parents, therefore I was taught somewhat in all the learning of my father. And I just have a note here is, you know, what does goodly parents look like? Well, I talked quite a bit a month ago about mothers and about all of their importance. And today I want to talk about fathers and all of their importance, and also to tell you that they go hand in hand. But I want us to just consider, you know, what does a good parent look like? What does a good father look like? You know, if we look at this story of Nephi, Nephi had a rough life. It was not a pleasant life. He went from a pleasant life to a very unpleasant life. He went from being somewhat rich, probably an upper middle class kid there in Jerusalem and having all sorts of things, to having nothing and wandering across the desert, starting a new life and all of that. But you know, why was he able to do all of these things? Why was he filled with hope and with strength? Well, he says in the very beginning, the very first statement he says is, I had good parents. And his father was a minister, a prophet of God, and he said, I was taught in the learning of my father. A father teaches, leads, and shows the way. You know, the mother has mothers and grandmas and aunts. You know, I talked quite a bit a month ago about the things that you can do, and I want today to remind us that, you know, a father's responsibility, an uncle's responsibility, a grandfather's responsibility is to teach and to lead, and we're going to talk about that here in a minute, and to show the way. To show the way. I was thinking about that, to show the way, and I was thinking about when the Israelites had left Egypt, and, well, they didn't know where to go. They'd never been out of Egypt before. They didn't know where to go. And so what did they do? Well, they followed a cloud that led them, showed them the way. They found themselves at the borders of an impassable sea, and their father showed them the way. And, you know, you look at that story of the Israelites as they came to the Red Sea and they had fled Egypt. And you read the story that there were the Pharaoh and his armies were marching down on them. And God said to Moses, lift up your arms and I'll spread the sea and you can walk across. And it doesn't say that this happened, but I guarantee there were some people who chose not to go across. I guarantee there were some who chose not to. But the father's job was to lead and to show the way, to equip his people with options. And I'm sure there were some who were destroyed by the armies of Pharaoh who chose not to cross. I want to go to Enos, in the Book of Mormon here, Enos chapter 1. Well, I guess there's only one chapter. And I'm just going to read verses 1 and 2. It says, behold, it came to pass that I, Enos, knowing my father, that he was a just man. For he taught me in his language, and also in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and blessed be the name of my God for it. And Enos, you know, he has this experience in his life where probably a lot of us have been, where we find ourselves completely overwhelmed. Overwhelmed with life, overwhelmed with struggles, overwhelmed because life is full of disappointments, because things that you had counted on had changed, because you lost a job or a relationship or some friend had betrayed you, or all of these things that come. And probably all of us who are spiritually mature have been in this place that Enos was. And he makes this statement that he was taught by his father in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And he says he went and he was alone. And he went out with the intention of providing, of going hunting. And he says, but he found himself just overwhelmed with everything in life. And he says, and I remembered the words that my father spake concerning eternal life and the joy of the saints. And those words sunk deep in my heart. And it made a change in his life. Because his father's words, he heard them. He heard them often. He knew what it was. My hope is, you know, I think about this. I recognize I got four kids, and I know that all four of my kids don't always enjoy being here. But I hope that they see through me the same thing that Enos did. That when they find themselves in life as it is bound to happen, being disappointed, being frustrated, being hurt, not knowing where to go, that they can think about this and they can say, ah, I remember I heard the words my father spoke concerning eternal life, concerning overcoming sin and struggle and disappointment and heartbreak and all of these things. And that they would say, blessed be the name of my God for it. I have written down here that a man of God, a father, a godly father, a godly grandfather, a godly uncle, these godly men, they look at life in making conscious decisions. Making conscious decisions. Andy would always say, growing up, you've heard him say it here a lot of times, he would say, you know, if you don't have a plan or a goal in mind, he says, you're off on your own safari. He'd always say that, his own safari. I can't tell you how many times. And I can't tell you how many times that he would say that to me when we would go out cutting wood or doing something when I was younger. Have goals. Make conscious decisions in life. Because if you don't, life will just happen. And that's how you find yourself overwhelmed. I want to encourage you, everybody here, men and women, but especially young men and older men and uncles and grandfathers and fathers. I want to remind you of this story. I've told it before. This is an old story. I think the thought process is it probably originated in Russia, but it's the story of the scorpion and the frog. And just brevity, I'll just give you the quick version of it. Is there's a frog who's sitting on the edge of a river and he wants to go to the other side, and a scorpion comes walking up and says to the frog, "Hey, you going to the other side?" "Sure I am," the frog says. Scorpion says, "Well, I'd like to go over too, but I can't swim. So how about if you give me a ride on your back?" And the frog says, "Well, why would I give you a ride? You're a scorpion. And if I let you close to me, you're going to sting me and then I'm going to die." And the scorpion said, "Now that doesn't make any sense. Why would I do that? Because if I stung you, you died. I wouldn't have any way to get over to the other side. If I did it in the middle of the river, then we would both die. It doesn't make any sense." And the frog says, "You know what? You got a really good point. Hop on my back." And they began to go across the river. And as they went across the river, the frog feels a sting in his back. And as he's beginning to be paralyzed by the poison, he says to the scorpion, "Why did you sting me?" And the scorpion said, "Because I'm a scorpion." This is something that for all of us, but especially for young men and fathers and all that, you know, one of these things that we can never get away from is our nature. And our nature is to feel that we can handle anything. We put ourselves in positions frequently to be tempted. We allow ourselves to be tricked into things. You know, I find this, I think I've said this before, I found this to be true at work. I learned early on. We finish our kind of our day of work, if you will, and have dinner, and we finish dinner and we clean up, and it's kind of our time at work. And typically we have, we call it family time, and we all hang out together, and we'll go in, and typically we'll go in the day room and sit in our big old lazy boys and turn the air conditioning down to 65 degrees and put on a movie. And I try to watch things that are right. And I learned early on that there are guys that I work with who they'll say, "Oh, this is a good movie, we should watch it." And good is different to all sorts of different people. And I found myself being tricked several times in a position where I found myself watching something, being privy to something that was despicable. And, you know, it's important, young men, and that you remember this, that temptation is temptation always, and you cannot handle it. It's like this frog, it was tricked into, thought, "Oh, you're right, you know, it doesn't make any sense for me to let you, for you to sting me, we both die," and all that, not realizing that the nature of a scorpion is to kill. And for men, this is something we need to remember. I just had that in here, it's kind of a side note to what I want to talk about today, but I think it's important to remind you guys of that. For those of you, there's not a lot of young men who are here, but I took over many years ago the man class at camp. Aaron teaches it with me. He unfortunately is going to have to teach it without me this year, which is a bummer. It's my favorite thing to do. But I have some plans to start up that here in this local again this year. But in our man class, it's an important class because it's important that young men and older men and uncles and grandfathers and all of that be reminded what a man of God looks like as Christ with our ultimate example. And it's important that we are reminded of this. And so I'm going to finish my sermon today going over a handful of things that I want to remind you of. And so for young men, and hopefully some of you who aren't here will listen to this later, and fathers and grandfathers and uncles to think about these things, and young ladies to think about, this is what you ought to be looking for in a man in your life. In our man class, I teach. Aaron and I sat down several years ago and we hashed out four maybe you call them cornerstones or pillars of manhood. And they look like this. A man of God is, first and foremost, a man of action. He doesn't stand by idly while sin, while temptation, while bad things happen. He doesn't just stand and watch. Man of God is a man of action. He's looking outward, and he's looking and seeing problems, and he's addressing them, not just ignoring. And That has a lot of implications we're going to talk about in a second. A man of God is a man of responsibility. He wants responsibility. The responsibility that God gave him, he willingly takes up. And he wants more. A man of God should be the man that when you're at work and they say, hey, I need something done, they should be looking to you. Because you're reliable. Because I know I can give you this. A man of God is a man of leadership. He leads from the front. Told you that we've been going through, we've had a captain's process in my organization, and this is something we've really been looking at. In the fire service, there's a lot of ways that you can utilize, you can use your position of responsibility to fulfill your job with doing very little. But there's also a way that you can fulfill your job by doing a lot and leading and showing the way. And a man of leadership, man of God is a man of leadership, and he leads from the front. You know, Christ was always there in the forefront, showing and teaching. He was the one. And then the fourth one is that a man of God is a man of expectation. That he looks and he sees all of the hardships, these things that Paul was talking about, the trouble and the perplexities of life and the persecutions and all of that. A man of God looks at that with expectation, that I endure through this because there is something on the other side that is worthwhile. And so I want to conclude my sermon here by going through each of these and reading a scripture and talking about it. And so I want to start here with this. And I'm really going to encourage you young men and you older men and you uncles and grandfathers and all of that, and hopefully those of you who listen to this in the future, to think about these things. And young ladies who are looking for a man in your life, that if you can look and pray about and find a man that has these qualities and characteristics that are of Christ and that are played out in Scripture, you will be doing very well. In the garden, we see that here is this first failure of man, and not just of mankind, but of a man, is that in the garden, there was a rule that was given, and it was given to Adam, and he was given responsibility for his wife, Eve, and he was told, there are rules to this responsibility. You don't just get to have this companion and not have responsibility. She doesn't come without something on you. And the only rule that he was given was there is one thing and one thing only you cannot do. And there in the garden, the tempter comes and encourages Eve to break that rule in the sight of Adam. And he stood there and did nothing. Not only did he stand there and do nothing, he also participated in it and broke this very first and most important rule. And there was a responsibility, there was a punishment that came because of it. And so this very first aspect of a man of God is a man of action, that he looks and sees the difficulties, the troubles, the struggles. This is the job of a pastor. Bob Hedrick told me this years ago. He says, you know, as assistant pastor, as a pastor, he says, your job is to be looking out and seeing what are the challenges that are being faced by your congregation. He says, you know, this is why you need to be reading the news and you need to be looking at all these things. What are the challenges that are coming up and how do you address those things? In the police department, I spent a lot of time on a squad that we were called proactive enforcement. Most of the time what you do is reactive. As a firefighter now, I'm reactive. I don't do anything until somebody calls. I don't do anything until a fire starts. Maybe I see it from the bay windows in my station, but until it starts, I'm not doing anything. But as a police officer, I spent a lot of time on a squad that was called proactive, and we went and we looked for trouble. People who were causing trouble, areas that needed to be addressed. And before somebody called 911, our job was to be there and to handle it. This is the job of a man, to be proactive. To be proactive in your life. You know, there are those of you who have had these various struggles, you know, struggles with anger and with frustration. Struggles, this is a struggle of men, with pornography. Right? Some of these things that come by nature to us, The man of God is a man of action, and he looks at those things and says, how can I solve this problem? Not be owned by it. And so we see this, a man who made a hard decision to be a man of action. And this is in Numbers in the 25th chapter. I'm just going to read this real quick. In the 6th through the 8th verse, there was Israel had made it to the land of promise, and they were going, and God had said through Moses, he said, don't mix with the people who are there, because they are full of idolatry, and they will lead you astray. So they will encourage you to do things that are not right. And so he told Moses, and Moses told the elders of Israel, don't do it. And of course, they did it anyway. And so starting in verse 3, it says, Israel joined himself to Baal Peor, who was the god that the people there in Moab, where Israel was at, that was the false god they were serving. So they joined themselves unto. They did exactly what God told them not to. There was something that was so tempting about it, and we're going to see here in a second. And it says, the anger of the Lord was kindled. And the Lord came to Moses and said, take the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord might be turned away. It says, they have done something that is terrible. So we go down to verse 6. And it says, behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation before the children of Israel who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So he says, there was something, as this was happening, the Lord told Moses, the people have done what I told them not to. And it was, and this situation happened, that there was a woman who, and the commentaries sound like she was probably a prostitute of this area, brought him in, and the men of Israel were doing what they're bound to do as this was going on. It says, and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it. And he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand. And he went after that man of Israel into his tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. And so the plague was stayed from the children of Israel. That's intense. That's intense. That this man Phinehas was looking, and he was looking to see what is going to destroy those who I'm responsible for, those who I love. What sin do I need to destroy? And took a great deal of courage, I'm sure. But this is one of these things that is a responsibility. Men, we are not called to be a turnstile and to just let things happen. Fathers, we're not called to let sin dwell within our homes and within our children and within our wife or within yourself. A man of God is a man of action, and he doesn't stand by idly while those around him or he himself is being buffeted and destroyed by sin. So I want to think about that. A man of God, and that man of action, you know, that's Christ-like. Everywhere he went and every interaction you see, he gave correction. He gave correction everywhere. Everywhere he went. A man of God is a man of responsibility. He accepts the responsibility that God has given him, and he wants more. He wants more. You know, there's this this really cool accounting in the book of Isaiah, where Isaiah is having this vision and he sees God sitting on the throne and he sees all these things happening, and God says, "I need someone who is courageous enough to go and speak for me. Is there anyone?" And Isaiah says, "Here I am. Send me. I'll do it. Give me the responsibility to speak for you. Give it to me." This is a characteristic of a godly man, is that he wants to be of service, that he's looking to have responsibility. When he's at work, that his job is done, that he's not taking it easy, he's not taking advantage of his employer, that he's giving an honest day's work, that when he does something, you know, he follows it through. I've had a little bit of experience about this lately. You know, I've been doing cabinets for probably 5 years now in my side business. And, you know, I remember years ago I was doing a job and I had a young man who's not here right now, but who's a part of this church, and he's come and he did a job with me, and there was one particular part of this kitchen that I just could not get right. I was not satisfied with it. And it was something that, you know, so as we sit and we're fiddling with this and trying to get it leveled just right and look just right, he says, are they even ever going to know about this? Are they ever going to see this? So why don't we just leave it? I can't do that. I can't. That's not, unfortunately, the opinion of a lot of craftsmen out there. I had a water leak at my house, and we've had a couple of things done, and I've had the same people come back out 5 or 6 times to fix things. And stuff that's finally with one of them is, I'll just take care of it myself. I can't stand you to come out again and do a terrible job. But, you know, that's not the characteristic of a godly man. Accepts the responsibilities that God has given him and desires more. And I just want to look here real quick in the book of Mosiah chapter 11 and read about these four men and Alma, who they were going about and they were causing all sorts of problems with the church and doing all that, and they had this tremendous change. Their life was changed. They were met by God, who said, stop destroying my people. You want to destroy yourself? Have at it. I will not let you continue to destroy my people. It was that important. And they had this tremendous change. Well, they had spent a great amount of time going throughout all of the land. Their fathers were men of responsibility. So they were known and they had this ability. They went around causing all sorts of chaos. And then their life was changed. And here you see these men taking this responsibility, starting in verse 200 of Mosiah chapter 11. Came to pass that Alma from this time forward began to teach the people and those which were with Alma at the time the angel appeared to them, traveling about the land and publishing to all the people that which they had heard and seen, preaching the word of God in much tribulation, being persecuted by those which were unbelievers, being smitten by them. And I'm going to jump down to verse 204. After they had traveled throughout all the land of Zarahemla, among the people which were under the reign of King Mosiah, zealously striving to repair all the injuries that they had done to the church. Sometimes the most responsible thing we can do is to be humble, is to recognize where we have failed, where we have sinned, where we missed the mark, and to look to repair those things. Sometimes that's the most responsible thing we can do. But a man of God is a man of responsibility. And again, young women, be looking for this. Be looking for this. A man who takes responsibility for himself, is active in his life, is working, is looking to make things around him better. There's something that I have long said in the fire service. I teach everybody who comes in to try to get this mindset of what does it take or not that. You know, this is my mindset in life. I am here to add value. I'm here to add value. If me being here in this job or in this church doesn't add some value, it is worthless. My job is to add value. Young men, add value. Be responsible. Add value. A man of God is a man of leadership. He leads from the front. I'm here to tell you this is something that some of you will never experience and in some ways be glad about it, but this happens in all sorts of things. But you know, being a leader is the worst position ever. You always have a target on you. Doesn't mean it's malicious. Gary knows this as pastor. I know this as pastor, as a boss at work, all of that. If there is a problem, whose fault is it? Always the leader. If somebody's upset, whose fault is it? Always the leader. These two people squabble over here. Who has to solve it? Always the leader. Two people destroy their marriage. Who do they go for? The pastor. The leader. It's thankless. It's difficult. But a man of God is a man of leadership. Takes the responsibility for those looking up to him, and then he leads from the front. There is a really cool, and for the women here, that probably doesn't do anything, but one of these things, you know, this is a man class, we like to watch war videos because it speaks to men. And there is a man His last name is Winters, and he finished World War II. He started as a lieutenant, I think at maybe 19 years old, and when World War II was done, he was a major. And but he got almost the highest medal that the military gave at that time, because he led an attack on D-Day. They had parachuted behind enemy lines. They were all over the place. If you know anything about what happened there during D-Day, is the paratroopers were supposed to go in early, and they were supposed to destroy key places. The problem is, as they're talking about 1940s technology, they got spread all over the place. They lost their stuff. They had last-minute experimental equipment given to them that failed and all that. So a bunch of these guys landed there, who knows where, in Normandy, France, and they had a knife and nothing else to fight thousands of Germans. And anyway, they finally get to a place where they find what their assignment was, and they were supposed to destroy some artillery pieces that were raining down on those men that you see the videos of who were storming the beaches in Normandy. And this man, Richard Winters, told his guys, he said, okay, we're going to attack all of these places. There's Germans everywhere. They're doing all this. And he says, you know, and he's got a handful of men under his responsibility, and he says, follow me. And he went. And he was the first one. And you look and you see at the end of this this video series, Band of Brothers, they're interviewing the men who are still alive. And this is, you couldn't believe it. This guy just took off and he went and did it himself. And then they were interviewing Richard Winters, and he says, I couldn't send somebody to do it if I wasn't willing to do it myself. If I wasn't willing to do it myself. This is the responsibility and the role of a man of God, to be a man of leadership, to lead from the front, to be willing to take the frustrations, to bear the burdens, to have people look and criticize. It's easy to criticize. We love criticism. There's that movie Ratatouille. And there is a profound statement in there. In the movie Ratatouille, this food writer is writing at the very end after he's had this revelation because a rat had cooked the best meal that he'd ever eaten, right? And he says, it's easy to criticize. It's fun to do. And especially when you've offered nothing up yourself. And to be a leader means to be willing to endure the criticism and the frustration, but making decisions and doing things because you are convicted of the rightness of it, of the righteousness of it, of the godliness of it. And you know, I found this in my life, is that when I was courageous enough to make a stand for God, I was willing to be seen, I was going to be a leader. Sure, I've gotten criticism, frustrations, people who are no longer my friends, but it's inspiring. It's inspiring to those who are around you when they see someone has done it. When you can tell someone how you've overcome. In 1 Nephi, in the first chapter, Nephi makes this bold statement. Here they had to go back. All the people there, they had left Jerusalem, and now they journeyed a bunch away, and they had to go back. And Nephi says, well, before that, you know, his father says, we need somebody to go back. You have to get the record of our people and of God, or else what are we going to do? You know, if we don't have anything to maintain our relationship with God, to understand His words and all that, what do we have? And so his father, Lehi, went to all of his sons, Nephi and Laman and Lemuel and all of that. And you know, Nephi wasn't the oldest. But his father says, someone's got to go back. And in verse 63, it says, now Lehi says to Nephi, thy brothers murmur, saying it's a hard thing that I've required of them. And in verse 65, it says, it came to pass that I, Nephi, said unto my father, I will go and do the things the Lord hath commanded me. For I know the Lord giveth no commandment unto the children of men, save he shall prepare a way for them. He shall prepare a way for them that they might accomplish the thing that He's commanded them. You know, we can be the face of God, the spokesman We can lead our families and our friends through difficult things. Have the eyes of the world and the target of the naysayers on our back. If we are convicted of this, that the Lord gives no commandment if he doesn't give a way that you can accomplish it. This is important. A man of God leading from the front and being willing to do that. You know, there's another example of it. I'm not going to read it, but when Israel came to the borders of the promised land, and there were 12 men who were chosen to go across. 12 of them go across, spend 40 days, and look and see what this land looks like. See what it's going to be like to fight to get into it. See what there is there. See if God's promise was true. Is it as good as he says it was? Is it worth everything we've gone through? And can we accomplish it? And these 12 men, they went and they spent 40 days. 40 days there, and they came back, and with all of these stories, you can't believe how productive this place was. They brought back a bunch of grapes that they had to carry between two sticks. It was so big. They said, it is everything God promised us and more, except God forgot to tell us that there were giants there, and we can't possibly destroy giants. And it says that when these men said that, it says the whole people there, and how many people were there? 600,000, something like that, people. They all rose up with one voice and said, it's for nothing. We've failed. We're all going to die except one man. One man stood up in front of a ton of people. One man willing to be a leader, not afraid of the eyes of all of the naysayers. And said, if God said we can do it, we can. It was Caleb. Not afraid to be a leader, a man of God. Well, this last attribute of man that I think is really important and perhaps is the most important is a man of God is a man of expectation. We, you know, as a Christian, life is difficult. We are challenged all the time. I have yet to have a day where I haven't faced something that challenged what my morals, what my ethics, what the things that I believe of God, you know, those things that are deep in my heart, there has not yet been a day where I haven't been challenged. And some days I do better than others. Some days I give in. And some days in the face of a lot of frustration, in the face of mocking and pointing fingers and all that stuff, some days I make that right decision, hopefully most days. But there is a reason why. And it is because I make an effort and I think about this. I want to be a man of expectation that everything that I endure here for God is worthwhile. That everything I do, that every hour I work, every extra job to provide for my family, every minute of sleep that I lose to counsel with someone who's in trouble or who's having struggles, that everything that I do is worthwhile. Man of expectation. That there is a blessing that is in front of me and it is worth giving everything for. It is worth every amount of struggle. I did a podcast once. I have a podcast that I was doing. I'll probably start up again on these manhood principles. And I have one of them that is titled, Why I Like Pain. And this is strange, but I enjoy pain. I enjoy pain when I look at an obstacle, a challenge that seems to be insurmountable, and I overcome it and it hurts. It gives a quality to the effort. It gives a value to the effort. I'm tired. Oh, it's time for me to be done. I don't like to do things that are easy. I haven't gained by doing things that are easy in my life. And I've never done well by doing the easiest thing. I've never benefited. I've never grown stronger. I've never been stronger spiritually by giving in, by going with the flow, by giving in to my humanity. I've never gotten stronger in a workout when I've only done the minimum amount of pull-ups or push-ups or whatever it is where I just barely start to feel tired. Never. Only when I push myself. And why? Because I have an expectation. This is what it will accomplish. And this is the most important aspect of manhood, is that we expect a greater reward from God, and it motivates us. And it ought to motivate us. There is this story in Moroni chapter 9, and it's the story, I've read this many times, I've said it many times, it's worth thinking about and looking at over and over again. And every time you feel discouraged, every time you feel like you've tried, you know, parents, mothers, fathers, you've tried to encourage your kids and they're just not listening, and you know, every time that you are praying and you don't feel like your answers have been done, you know, why do we keep going? Why do we keep praying? Why do we keep pushing forward? Well, we must have an expectation. And here last letter that a father is writing to his son before he's going to die, he writes these words. And he was there, Moroni's father, Mormon, and he was leading armies into battle, and he was going to be killed. This was it. After this, he was never heard from again. This was the final goodbye to his son. And so he's there, and he says, I am around. I'm here with these people. We're trying to fight. We're trying to be victorious, but I'm struggling because I'm surrounded by people who are angry and idolatrous, and every time I try to speak for God and I try to encourage them there's a better way, oppose me. And so he makes this statement. He says, I'm laboring with them continually, and when I speak the word of God with sharpness, they tremble in anger against me. When I use no sharpness, they harden their hearts against it, and I fear lest the Spirit of the Lord has ceased striving with them. For so exceedingly do they anger that it seems to me they have no fear of death. They've lost their love one towards another. They thirst after blood and revenge continually. Man, if that, with the exception of people swinging swords at each other, isn't an apt description of our world right now, I don't know what is. This is where we live. This is where we live. This is where we minister. This is where we have opportunity to lead and to be responsible and to take action. Now, my beloved son, notwithstanding their hardness, let us labor diligently. For if we should cease to labor, we should be brought under condemnation. For we have a labor to perform while in this tabernacle of clay, that we may conquer the enemy of all righteousness and rest our souls in the kingdom of God. You know, he makes this statement. He says, if you let yourself be detracted, be afraid, be embarrassed about serving God, about doing the right thing because of everybody else who is around you, you cannot have hope. But if you move forward with expectation that everything we do for the Lord here is because of a promise that lies ahead of us, you're fulfilling this most important aspect of being a man, and that is being a man of expectation. I want to just real quick tell you four quick things that I want us to think about on top of this. I want you to remember this, that Christ, this story of Christ, he showed us how to die. Christ taught us how to die. He taught us how to die. I have written here, sacrifice is only sacrifice as if it's for a greater purpose, or else it's just dying. And men are called to sacrifice for others. That's part of these four cornerstones of being a man, is being willing to sacrifice for others. And that doesn't mean giving your life. Maybe that means giving your time. Maybe it means getting up in the middle of the night and going and helping somebody. Maybe it means, you know, think of all the different ways that someone might be need you. Christ showed us how to die. What's worth fighting for? Peter took out his sword, swung it, trying to fight. But Christ didn't fight for himself. He didn't fight against death for himself. He fought against death for us. And a man of God, a father, a husband, all of that, we're called to be sacrificial for those who are around us. And you yourself have to be fixed on Christ for that to be within you. Christ endured temptation, people turning on him. He also endured pain and exhaustion, which was the last of those human conditions. The very last thing he had to do was suffer unimaginable pain. And what do I think? Well, the scriptures lead me to believe that my dad didn't have such a profound statement because Christ was the one who did it first. Didn't focus on the pain, didn't sit and think about it, but was looking forward with expectation. That he was willing to endure all of those things because he was the epitome of a man of God. And so I hope I've given you a handful of things to consider, hopefully for men and for women, for the few of us that are here. I can't tell you how strongly I feel about these things and how much I see day by day in my job and have for a lot of time, a lot of years, and I've seen it, unfortunately, in all of the places I'm in and have been a part of in my life, lacking godly men. And it's important. And so, you know, mothers and grandmothers and aunts and all of that, you know, as you're talking to the children in your life, you know, be encouraging them of these things. These little boys that you're helping to raise, be talking to them about these things. And young women, be thinking about this. And you know, when you're looking for companions in life, these are the aspects, these are the attributes of men of God. So thank you guys. I'll see you tonight. We're going to do a study tonight. But I appreciate your time here.